One of the most controversial and notorious jails in America, Rikers Island, has stood on a 416-acre strip of land in the East River since its founding in 1932. Its longstanding history has made the structure a figure in the ongoing debate surrounding prison reform and restorative justice. When former Mayor Bill de Blasio approved the closure of Rikers in 2017, Architectural Digest writer Ava Federley was among those who believed it was a step towards a more humane future. But after digging deeper and speaking to communities directly affected by the decision, she discovered that the consensus was hardly universal. She writes about this in the new book, These Walls, The Battle for Rikers Island and the Future of America's Jails. Ava Federley is an investigative reporter and has been published in the Architectural Digest as well as New York Magazine. Again, the name of the book is These Walls, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Ava Federley to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Joe. I appreciate it.
So this really then does come out of this decision by the de Blasio administration in 2017. So where did you begin on all of this?
I began this journey about 4 years ago, and it was right after City Council approved the borough-based jails program. At the time, I was freelancing for Architectural Digest, and I had a background writing for Courthouse News, where I was on staff and where I was in courthouses in the American South, actually, getting used to that daily rhythm of how the American legal system works. So when this initiative was really brought to my attention, I was fascinated in this intersection of criminal justice reform and architecture. It combined both of my passions, and this was something that I was really wanting to write about for Architectural Digest. It was, I think, a little bit about outside of their usual coverage. But I took this initiative about the borough-based jails, where New York City was positioning, using new design, more humane design, to help solve the city and, you know, the nation's mass incarceration problem. So my coverage began there with Architectural Digest and writing about this in several different articles. But then it quickly expanded to a book, which became These Walls.
So let's talk about the architectural part of it, because it is a fascinating way to look at jails and prisons, right? And not only of what they can be and what the future holds, but also what they were like in 1932 and the fact that they're still standing and imprisoning real life people.
Yeah, definitely. That's the thing. So on Rikers Island has many different jails. And that's one thing that I started realizing when I started writing this book, is that there was a lot of confusion. A lot of people were getting, they all thought that prisons and jails were interchangeable. They're not. Or they were calling Rikers Island a big prison on this island. It's not. Rikers Island has about 8 active jails, which mainly hold people that haven't been convicted of a crime. These jails hold people until their court date. So that's a fundamental difference. Now, just in terms of architecture, the first modern jail that was opened on Rikers was in the 30s, and it's this Art Deco style jail that was built there. It's since been shut down, but there's many other different jails there that currently exist. And just in terms of the history of the architecture of prisons, I also dive into that in my book. I thought that was really important because in chapter 2, I take the readers inside America's first full-blown penitentiary. And some might be surprised to learn that this actually just opened less than 200 years ago. This whole idea of this style of punishment of incarcerating people really just began with the opening of Eastern State Penitentiary in Pennsylvania. So I take the reader through that, and we study the architecture and how architecture was used to kind of facilitate this style of justice, and then how architecture and this whole niche of justice architects was really born and took off.
You talk in the book about the misconception that jails and prisons are the same. And as you point out, they certainly are not. Give us a sense of why that was important to illustrate.
Yeah, I think the way that the justice system is designed, and which in America, and which you can see through the architecture, is it's meant to be away from the public eye, out of sight, out of mind. And people see, you know, I've seen some of the best newspapers and editors get this wrong, using the terms prisons and jails interchangeably. My book focuses on jails specifically, because jails are these unique institutions that are designed to hold people while they wait for their court dates. It's to hold people who can't afford bail. So if somebody gets in trouble and they go to their arraignment and they have to put down some cash for bail, if they can't afford it, and if they can't go to a bail bond company down the street, which, by the way, the whole concept of bail, that's only legal in one other country besides America, and that's the Philippines. But, you know, if you can't afford bail, if you can't do that, then you have to go serve your time in jail and wait until your court date. But the problem is, at Rikers, and this is similar to a lot of other jails around America, at Rikers, 87% of people that are locked up in there haven't been convicted of a crime. So, and with this legal system, it's very slow. So people that I talked to for the book, some of them have were in there waiting for years. And what, for example, one man who I spoke to, Tysheem Jenkins, he was in there for about 2 years on drug charges and then ultimately was found not guilty. And he missed the birth of his daughter and obviously a lot of other things in his life he missed out on. So I wanted to draw attention to this and just highlight for the general public that there is a major difference between jails and prisons. Prisons are where you go when you've been convicted of a crime and you have a sentence and you're going to serve out a long-term sentence. Then you're sent away to prison. But jails are these little local institutions that just hold people to make sure they don't run away for trial, ostensibly, before trial.
So as we understand it, Rikers Island mandated a close by 2027. Initially, as I said in the introduction, you were looking at this, as most were, as a positive. And also, as I said in the introduction, what you learned is that it is far more complex than that, and trying to figure out what exactly the right thing to do is. How much of this story, and I kept wondering this in reading the book, I mean, you address it beautifully, but how much of it is geography, of where it is?
I think geography has a lot to do with just how frightening and awful it can be. Just getting to Rikers Island alone, just as an attorney or as the mother of someone incarcerated or a wife, friend, it's very difficult to get there. It can take up to a day. And just being so removed on this far-off island dedicated to incarceration, I think that can have a really isolating, awful effect on people who are inside. It's also extremely costly. Just Department of Correction, they have to bus the people who are incarcerated in all the different jails on Rikers to different courthouses, which are in the boroughs. And it, just that cost alone per year, it costs $31 million just in transporting people back and forth and back and forth to the courthouses. So, yes, the geography is not ideal, needless to say. And that was how the borough-based jails program, that was one of the things that they were advocating for. They said this will be better for those who are incarcerated and people who are doing volunteering and programs there and the people who work there and people who want to come visit. It will be positive to have new jails built in the boroughs that are close to the courthouses because that will just foster a better connection with the community and it will just be more accessible. On another side, I talked to a lot of neighbors of the new jails, and what I discovered is that many of them don't necessarily want that. And those there are a lot of reasons why, and I talked to myriad people. For instance, in Chinatown, they're demolishing the tombs That's one of the older jails that stands there. The city is getting ready to demolish the tombs, and they want to build a new jail in its place. So there are many people that I talked to in Chinatown said that they don't need a new jail in their community. What they need and what they've been asking for decades is they want safe and affordable housing, effective crime prevention in their neighborhood. They want community programs and better education, and that erecting a brand new jail that's so costly in their neighborhood sends a message to young people in their community. Like, this is where your eventuality is. This is where you'll end up. And putting programs inside the jail isn't necessarily the best way forward, some people said. What we need is programs outside of the jails.
The book is These Walls, The Battle for Rikers Island and the Future of America's Jails. What do you make of this battle for Rikers Island, of where it stands right now?
Oof. Well, yeah, there's been a lot of movement recently. So, you know, Mayor Adams here, he's a tough on crime former cop. He's been saying for a while that the city needs a plan B, that the borough-based jails program is not feasible. One, because it's too expensive, he said, and two, because the jail population is getting too big on Rikers. Since I started writing this book, the population of Rikers has doubled. You know, there's been less transparency. There's a federal monitor, Steve Martin, who's been tasked with monitoring Rikers Island jails complex. He's reported that there's been a disturbing level of regression under Adams. Just like in 1 week alone, in September, the federal monitor said that there were 48 incidents of self-harm or people attempting suicide. There were 15 fires there. People who are incarcerated are missing their health visits. And that's just 1 week. So now the Lipman Commission, they're the ones who designed this borough-based jail program in the first place. They actually have just announced that they're going to be launching kind of a Lipman Commission 2.0, where they're going to be looking at how they can better reduce the population at Rikers, how they can be more transparent, and how they can try and effectively start reducing the population at Rikers in order to fit into these new jails that they're supposed to build by 2027. The thing is, I'm pretty positive it's not going to be done by 2027. Even just Brooklyn alone, that's the first jail that's going to be built. That's not supposed to be built until 2029. So things have slowed down a bit. All the jails are filling up.
The idea of transparency, that's really hard to achieve, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And I think, too, just with what's interesting about jails versus prisons is that we have many jails around America. There's more jails than prisons. And each jail kind of gets to operate as its own little fiefdom. There's no overarching entity that governs or really provides oversight for all of the nation's jails. So each jail across America operates with its own set of rules, protocol, who gets to decide who is allowed in. So while one jail might be transparent, like one that I go visit down in Hot Springs, Arkansas, in my book, These Walls, that jail in Hot Springs was very transparent and was very open to inviting an investigative journalist inside. Whereas Rikers, it's much harder to get in. You know, you have to know someone and someone who's incarcerated, and, you know, it's a whole different animal. So that was one thing that was very fascinating for me to go through while writing this book, was just seeing how the different jails handled my request to come inside, and then also just seeing like how transparent they decided to be.
When it comes to, and I want to circle back to architects for a moment because it's something you write about, there is an organization called Architects, Designers, Planners for Social Responsibility. They've been fighting for the American Institute of Architects, the AIA, to prohibit its members from designing spaces that facilitate torture, death, and or solitary confinement. What does that say that an entire profession or a wing of a profession has taken this very strong stand and what that will do and help acknowledge in the design in the future of buildings and specifically jails?
That is a great question. I think it was a really great and significant move that the American Institute of Architects finally decided to ban its members, architects, any architect, not just justice architects, but it said our architects, anyone who's a member of the AIA, is not allowed to design anything meant for or anything where torture or execution can take place. And I think it's a really good thing that they did that, because the ADPSR has been rallying for that for years and years. And I think the AIA kind of shied away from it and wouldn't really take a stand. And I think that the AIA as a national group, as one of probably the biggest organization of architects, the fact that they're now standing up and saying, we're not going to stand for this anymore, and this is unethical, and that we're going to ban our members, that's a really serious move. And I am curious to see how that's going to affect the long term, what kind of effects we'll see, and how that will change design of prisons and jails in our future.
You talk about this in the book, but as we wrap up our time together, do you believe that there is a consensus forming?
Yes, I interviewed a lot of different people for the book, and that was one of my goals, was I wanted to see what many different people had to say. So whether it's neighbors of the new jails that are going to be built, or incarcerated people, formerly incarcerated people, cops, correction officers, justice architects, I wanted to see what everyone had to say. And interestingly, it seemed like a lot, or one might assume that these people would have diametrically opposed views in some cases. But what I saw was that there was this through line where a lot of people said that we need to be really redefining how we define justice in America. We incarcerate more people than anywhere else in the world. Our recidivism rate as a nation is extremely high. People very often go back in to jails and to prisons after they get out. And it just, I think a lot of people were saying that this is not working. We need something else. And there were a lot of different views about what we need. But way more programs in communities, underserved communities, investment in education, offering restorative justice. That's a different kind of justice. It's not punitive. It's not locking people behind bars. Instead, restorative justice makes someone who's committed violent acts confront the person somebody that they harmed, and go through an entire program that makes them understand why they committed this harm in the first place. There's more restorative justice programs that are popping up throughout the nation. We're seeing great success with that. Yeah, I think just investing a lot more in communities was a big trend that I saw people saying that they wanted, and that what we needed as a society.
And one of the things that I just find interesting is, I mean, you made the point early on in our conversation that as we look at this globally, this is all still relatively new, right? This is something that is not all that old. And yet we never had a golden age. Like, we never really got it right at any time, did we? Is there a time that we can look at and say, oh, this is something that we learned that we should go back to?
Yeah, that is a great question. I think when we first opened the Eastern State Penitentiary, that was really the Quakers who rallied around this new idea of justice. And when they started rallying the state of Pennsylvania to design this brand new style of building that would house people who have wronged society, the Quakers' idea was that this place would be an area where people could live in solitude, they could read the Bible, and they could repent, thus the name the penitentiary. That, to me, I'm not going to say that that was necessarily the best idea, but I feel like that was a kinder way, or at least some kind of approach to dealing with justice. Because before, America had had to kind of copy England's style of punishment, which, you know, was mainly corporal and capital punishment. So the Quakers, America had this new opportunity to design its own unique style of justice. And the Quakers, I think their hearts mainly were in the right place, that this would be an attempt to help people in this case, study religion, to do better. But that was, I guess what I'm saying is, that was a time when people were being experimental. They were trying to figure out how to correct people that were wronging society. And this was one idea that they came up with. That idea blew up. It's now everywhere. We have jails and prisons everywhere. We have more prisons and jails than we have colleges and universities. So I don't think that that was necessarily what the Quakers were intending, but I like the idea of how the Quakers were being innovative at this time and creative. So maybe that's something that people can start to do, is be creative about how we're going to change justice and the whole way that we deal with wronging society.
Ava Federley's new book is These Walls, The Battle for Rikers Island and the Future of America's Jails. It is published by Avid Reader Press. Ava, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on.
Be well. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Again, the name of the book, These Walls, The Battle for Rikers Island and the Future of America's Jails. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.